Thorn in Your Side is a podcast recorded on the various lands of First Nations peoples, land that always was and always will be Aboriginal land. While there's air that is breathed and water that nourishes and provides, ownership of this land remains unresolved. Respects are paid to elders past and present in the ongoing quest for self-determination and reclamation of land.
Thorn in your side, you know that's all you'll ever be.
Hello everyone, welcome to Thorn in Your Side. This is going to be a lone wolf episode, so fair warning, there's about to be an amount of introspection. And one big reason why I'm in quite an introspective mood is, well, two reasons. One is that it's at the end of the year. I'm technically on holidays. I have a four-day weekend, I suppose, if that's holiday enough, while everyone tends to get a bit more indulgent and has at least a week off this time of the year. I'm doing something that's a bit out of the box, at least for me personally, and just basically doing the bare minimum. So, four-day weekend here, the three-day weekend there, and then it'll be the new year. But anyway, that's the first reason. And the second reason is because today, or the day of the recording, it celebrates the 25th anniversary of my childhood pet dying. And that anniversary still has resonance with me because, in a very symbolically jarring way, it was at that time, during that event, it was a very quick and abrupt affirmation that I was an adult. And as the years have followed, I think it was definitely a case of you're an adult whether you like it or not, because suddenly the realities of the world became quite apparent. And I say that I wasn't necessarily ready because it has felt like a bit of a struggle in that. And I mean, I've been trying to figure out and try to find answers why, and you try to explain these things as things being attributed to still being young and still trying to figure out stuff, or because like 25 years ago I was 19 years old that I'm still kind of going through puberty, so maybe my brain just hasn't been fully formed yet and this is kind of why I'm feeling the way that I am, or you're just a bit green. But as the years progressed, there was still that sense of uncertainty and, I guess, always underneath the surface, just this sense of sadness because I couldn't really quite put my finger on what was going on, despite all the common sense explanations that were surrounding me. But I think, and I guess this aligns with the 25th year of this anniversary being a very well-rounded number, it is further symbolic in the sense that I feel like this has probably been the first year that I've been able to really figure out what is happening. And it is a combination of the personal and the systemic. It can't be just ultimately explained on one end. It has to involve bits of both, at least from my perspective and my own circumstances anyway. I think for me, an amount of peace and efficacy has come through being able to make sense of what's going on. And I've covered it in previous episodes that it's really dawned upon me that there is an autistic presentation there for me. And this year, and in a very, again, like 25 years ago, but I suppose this time around in a lot more intense manner, because I think there were a lot of concerns there, especially from a medical standpoint, as the year progressed, that this was about now coming to terms of what that diagnosis was and what other things were going on with me, and then trying to come up with something that works. And that's not exactly the easiest prospect when you don't necessarily have the economic safety to be able to properly explore that. I need to have a job, I need to have an income, or otherwise I am in a pretty precarious and risky position where there is the risk of just deteriorating. And that was definitely something I didn't want to do, despite the fact that I was showing good signs of that earlier this year. So there isn't the economic safety for me. And because of that, there was a huge pressure to try to figure out what was going on, so I could be psychically and psychologically employable again and be able to have my agency back. And I think that's pretty much the circumstances of society, where people need to these days have their own sense of economic self-sustainability. I mean, there's still economic models there where there is people that are economically dependent. I mean, there's still elements of the subservient housekeeping wife and the breadwinning male and the two impressionable children. But I think we are living in times now where that nuclear model is becoming increasingly challenged. And so one's economic agency is expressed in a variety of ways, and there's an empowerment to that, but the problem is that it's still wound together within an economic context. You can't, and I've learnt this year, you can't necessarily find out what you are and who you are and what makes you tick without there being some financial means to fall back on and live off of whilst that happens, or otherwise the precariousness of things take over and then the survival mechanisms kick in and you're basically living day by day, and that's not really a healthy existence, at least not one within a world that expects you to basically live for a good 60 to 80 years, or even upward of that if you're more lucky. So that's what this year has been. It's been a very intense one for me, and I would hazard to say that looking back, this is probably going to be the year where it was pretty much make or break, I'd say. Made it in the sense that I was able to, a couple of months ago from recording, be able to find a job, which has got me back on track. There's a part of me that's still a bit problematic in the sense that I find meaning through work. But then again, it might also be a sense of self-relief because of what I expressed earlier, and that I've got that economic agency again. So I like to think that is probably a more powerful claim, trait, need to have, rather than one that involves searching for identity through one's work. So I think that's my modus operandi anyway, at least that's my alibi. But I'm hoping that it is a truthful comment. And I mean, often a lot of these political diatribes, they're about asserting one's view, and there's a liberalism to that where it's like a competition of ideas or viewpoints or opinions or ideologies. I think this year, if it hasn't already been the case, it has been the year that it's really tested out my beliefs and how much of what I understand of the world or what I've educated myself about the world actually measures up to reality. And I think an amount of that is definitely on point. And I definitely rubbed up against that when having to go through the medical system this year, finding out that only so much of it can help if you're in a really acute situation, to the point where, and if you find a real prick of a clinician, they'll say, well, if you're going to have your problems, it's not going to be here, because you're going to have your problem, but it's not going to be me with the dirty hands here. It's going to be somewhere else, not me. So there's that self-preservation I see that kind of happens in the medical sector against the backdrop of finite resources, and also still some sort of under-recognition of public interest or public health. There, and that exposes some sense of class disparity there, I feel, where there is a vertical order and on the bottom is public health, and everyone's aspiring to be able to access all the virtues and resources that are available in the private sphere. For me, with all of my difficulties, I did have some privilege in the fact that with the money that I had saved away, which incidentally enough was originally going to be towards a future housing deposit, that got reinvested in some sections of privately based health, which enabled me to recover. It wasn't absolute. I definitely still needed to lean hard on hospitals and GPs and everything that has some coverage through Medicare, but it felt that sense of limitation and with what you're accessing and often falling through the gaps, and which I've definitely referred to a few times this year in previous episodes. And in a very hard way, it's difficult to accept that it might necessarily be me. No one's telling you, or not too many people, and I definitely appreciate and love the ones that are with me on this, that will say to you that it's fucked up and this is why you're not getting all the help that you need. You're not acting up by self-advocating for yourself and addressing the fact that there are gaps, or even worse still, railing up against any commentary where there's that self-preservationist attitude where basically you're being told to pull your head in, pull your socks up, pick yourself up by the bootstraps, whatever homespun individualistic metaphor that can be brought up for the sake of just shutting the fuck up and just accepting what's going on, because this is as good as it's going to get. Or is it? Because I mean, that's been my whole project for at least the last 25 years, to try and figure out, is there prospects of change? Because no matter how hard I've tried, I can't ignore what I experience day to day. There is something missing that needs to be leading to a lot more fulfilling of needs and wants. Buying shit, self-medicating, gorging on McDonald's, doing all the things that involve burning out a credit card, consuming. It's just papering over cracks. And again, economics are not going to solve everything. And I've found this out in a very rude way. It isn't because Marx said so or because this ideologue matches up with that assessment. It's the material experience that affirms that. If there is a glass half full perspective after what has been a very brutal and, I guess to disclose, death-defying year, it has been about really testing out if what I've learnt and understood about the world is actually true. And I feel it is. And I've been kind of given a chance to land on my feet again. And I think from here, it's about trying to work out what to do as a response. And I feel like this is where a more responsive posture is going to happen. And for me, this has been maybe a lifetime in the making. I mean, there has been some flashes where I've attempted to do stuff, but in previous attempts, I've still been undercut by still unresolved, unexplained things going on with me. But I feel like there is now an explanation and certainty over what's happening with me. So I feel like I now have the solid footing and the foundations to be responsive and to be able to be a bit more critical and show a bit more jurisprudence and criticism, I guess, over what I can kind of hook into and what I can ally with and what I can even create myself that I feel that's going to be effective. And what is good politics? Yeah, joining a truck group is just not going to cut it, you know? I'm not going to be able to latch on to some philosophy that is going to give me meaning and be able to explain everything for me and inform my politics. It's not going to be enough for me. That's why the socialist organizations are out of bounds and for me are quite unuseful. This is informed from my own lived experience, and maybe that's the key term, because lived experience is something that is definitely couched within the professional circles in many ways, but I feel like it has some kind of resonance. And I wonder if a lot of that has got to do with that an amount of people that are empowered or enabled to do something, whether it is the hardcore activist that organizes X, Y, and Z on the streets rally or strike or other form of social political disruption, or the politician, or the high-level manager that's working in the not-for-profit sector. All of these people, they have a sense of privilege that precludes them from not necessarily needing that, the groundedness of what they've kind of railed up against personally to inform what they do and where they come from. They do it because they feel that it's the right thing to do. And there's a morality to that. And whilst there's good intentions with that, you can opt out if it gets too hard. You can fall back on things. And that's the economic agency. But if you've seen and if you felt and if you still feel that risk, where's the plan B? And that I think that is where things like lived experience have that resonance and should require further understanding that should extend beyond the professional sphere and into that of the personal and the political and the washing together of the personal and political. I think lived experience is still undervalued, and I just don't think the voices for that are there at the moment. But perhaps this is why there is motivation for a podcast project like this, to be able to, well, if it's not going to be there for you when as you search around, create something yourself. And here I am, and this is what I'm doing. So, like I warned you fellow listener or listeners, I'm pretty confident it's now plural. It is 25 years in the making, these introspective determinations that I'm producing right now. And I suppose the other thing as well, just looking at it from 25 years, is that none of this I was actually prepared for, which I've kind of alluded to earlier on when I was talking about, but whilst I wasn't prepared for it, I think what did keep me going was that I did feel a sense that I could kind of predict what was going to happen, which I've kind of learned now is becoming increasingly illusory. I remember like year zero, just after the family dog passed away, there was that feeling that because of the stuff that I've learned and understood at that point, that there is going to be some sort of crunch moment economically. And things will just improve after that, whether it be through a working class revolution or this sudden self-actualization of a multitude of people where they just kind of realize this isn't good enough. That hasn't necessarily happened. If anything, it's been like a protraction of a crisis to the point where crises are being seen in themselves to be something to be capitalized upon in the strictest economic terms. Once again, there is a crisis industry. I think we've seen this academically covered now through the ideas of people like Naomi Klein and Anthony Lowenstein, how they cover the idea of disaster capitalism, where there is some economic benefit or profit to be made by industrializing crisis response. So for that, if business is good, why would you try to improve anything? Because capital flies and morphs and searches for things in a variety of ways. And it's very viral in the sense that it'll keep searching until it finds something that will work and it'll keep modifying. And I hate talking about capitalism and capital as some sort of organism, because it is people at the end of the day that actually act in these situations, but the parallels are still there in that when you look at viruses, it isn't a case of just this rogue element or unit just going around trying to find something that works. It's about constant evolution and a massive parasitic death rate, and then there'll be that one thing that actually gets through and works and then infects a whole bunch of people, and that's the thing that gets capitalized upon, that winning thing. It's a clumsy metaphor by the sound of things, but that's where I feel like, I think, at least looking back at me 25 years ago, like I did not realize how dynamic the ways of capital accumulation could become. And I suppose I mentioned viruses because I am mindful of still being in COVID times. Maybe using the same logic, that idea of, okay, well, one particular viral strain will die in its ass and then that'll be it. And wouldn't that not be the same idea for capital? It's one prime mover to arrange capital or accumulate capital or to generate profit, if that fucks up or it becomes usurped or insurrected by a labor base that is able to reclaim its own economic agency, then that opportunity for capital accumulation is gone, it's dead, and therefore the wheels of capitalism in total fall off. But it hasn't been the case. That cliche in Jurassic Park, or that movie quote mentioned by Jeff Goldblum.
There's one thing the history of evolution has taught us, it's that life will not be contained. Life breaks free, it expands to new territories, and it crashes through barriers painfully, maybe even dangerously, but I'm simply saying that life finds a way.
Life finds a way? Viruses find a way. Capital finds a way? So I think that's kind of what I've seen in those 25 years, that it just continues to find a way. It finds a way to remorph, regraft, co-opt, find different ways of accumulating. And that's capitalism. And I guess I take the lead from the likes of David Harvey in that idea that I think it's important to make that distinction. Capital and capitalism. Capital being that ability to generate quantifiably an amount of product or value that can be reinvested, and it represents a form of economic growth. But the circumstances of it are overlooked, where you see varieties of exploitation to very genocidal levels, as we've seen over history. But capitalism, that ideology that people ascribe to in order to find ways of making shit work for them. It takes a capitalist to really work towards finding capital. And I think in that sense, that's the difference. You can be a failed capitalist, but capital, it's immoral, and that's the distinction. You can't have failed capital. It's there. And it has potential, it always has potential, but always some social consequences associated with that potential that may or may not be acknowledged by the capitalist. And in many of the instances, I would very heavily presume that it's very much in the overlooked bracket. So I'm going in a variety of tangents, but I'm hoping that I am maintaining some kind of trajectory. So over the 25 years, I was kind of expecting some kind of decay that was going to happen. At the very least, some sort of degradation of what was happening and the economic conditions that sustain capitalism. I did actually see that, and I think you do kind of see different sounds that kind of go off like fireworks here and there that kind of suggest decay. And I can think of examples, like when you think of different economic crunches that have happened over the last 25 years, things that immediately come to mind involving the dot bubble crashes in the noughties, the Asian tiger economy going belly up after its own little version of capitalism was not sustainable. Was it rubbed up against the more imperial form of it?
During 1997-98, many of the East Asian tiger economies suffered a severe financial and economic crisis. This had big consequences for the global financial markets, which had become increasingly exposed to the promise that Asia had seemed to offer. The crisis destroyed wealth on a massive scale and sent absolute poverty shooting up. In the banking system alone, corporate loans equivalent to around half of one year's GDP went bad, a destruction of savings on a scale more usually associated with full-scale war. The precise cause of the crisis remains a matter of debate. Fingers have been pointed at the currency peg adopted by some countries and a reduction of capital controls in the years before the crisis. Some blamed economic contagion. The crisis brought an end to a then widespread belief that there was a distinct Asian way of capitalism that might prove just as successful as capitalism in America or Europe. Instead, critics turned their fire on Asian cronyism, ill-disciplined banking, and a lack of transparency.
And I guess probably the most famous one, I think, in the last 25 years, that being the global financial crisis, 2008-2009, which was basically the big housing bubble in the US popping and all the guts of it just falling out everywhere. That particular moment might have been a suggestion to me that things were going to basically rupture, but no, there's just been this meandering. And I think what has kept it up is that idea of desperate dynamism to find sources of capital, to basically engender the idea of crisis, because that can be capitalized upon. So you're seeing ever since 2008, 2009, this meandering of the capitalist project, not so much neoliberal, but it has, well, I suppose there is that neoliberalism side to it, but I think state has increasingly had a role to play in acting as a buffer to, I'm not going to say protect against capitalism's worst impulses, but I think it's pretty much reaffirmed this idea that capitalism it's an ideologue. Capital, or the raising of capital, involves a variety of stakeholders, not necessarily the capitalist, not just the capitalist rather, but other factors such as state, labor, technology, space. All of this conspires to a raising of capital, and if one might fail, then there's got to be other things that pick up the slack. And that was definitely affirmed to me during the COVID pandemic, which created an amount of crisis because the things that often acted as the levers for capital had to be abruptly shut down. And I don't think there was so much pause rather than just a recalibration as to what those levers and buffers are going to be. And I think what you've seen is has been some recomposition of even capitalism itself. Like the ideologues that advocate for capitalism, they have kind of changed their tune in many ways.
You need to scam a couple of sticks. You can usually spot your average dim-witted sticks around these tree dummies. You trick them into a bundle like so. You grab two marks and defraud them into rubbing together. You flim-flam your breath onto the sticks. You bamboozle these flaming idiot sticks onto the other marks, and all of them will catch on fire like a bunch of suckers.
Whoa! These sticks are stone cold dupes.
To say that, where are the new sources of capital going to come from? I mean, like, because there's that social conscience now that the repercussions of capital do create some pretty fundamental consequences, like climate change and starvation and war. And I guess, you know, that idea of total destruction, I think that idea of finality, I think that's what's kind of compelled capitalism to take another tact and think, well, like, if it's got this really total destructive quality, then does it need to find new terrain? And I think there's been some rumblings about the idea, I guess, of space exploration, which, as it comes out of my mouth, sounds a bit fantastic and possibly science fiction-y, but...
A three-way race to Mars.
We're not going to come in second place again.
Today, we take the next step towards a self-sustaining Mars colony.
You're seeing it through the idea or prospects of mining the moon, mining asteroids, looking at resources externally, and this idea of moving off-world, and that's where capital's next flight might manifest. So I don't think there's going to be that crunch which will lead to an abrupt end in a positive way. I'm hoping so. I mean, that's what kind of compels me to keep moving forward, because what else is there? There has to be that. That's my motivation in many ways, just turning that there is no alternative idea on its head. Like, there's no safety net. This is it. If not for me, then where is everyone else? I think that is my interest right now, and particularly why I continue to latch on to projects such as this podcast. So I think it's about maintaining hope, and I don't mean that in a very moralistic Barack Obama way. I mean material hope. Like, what are the material prospects of hope? And it's been a very difficult year for me personally, so many times there this year it's been very hard to identify that, but what has kept me going has been the support of people in my life that have been there for me very selflessly. So that's where my hope lies. Just this idea that people are innately there for each other. I mean, when the environmental circumstances are there, it can be that sense of competition and people being out for themselves and liking or hating people and opposing people and getting over the top of other people. But I think at the end of the day, what gives people strength and hope is those opportunities to assist, to cooperate, to help others that won't necessarily have the best circumstances at that point in time, but someday there will be the chance to return the favor. So the exchange of things, the mutual aid of things, that's fundamental. I feel like that's part of humanity. It is a human thing to do. And I think capitalism is becoming increasingly divorced from that idea of humanity in very sociopathic ways. And again, I still don't want to err upon the idea of capital and capitalism or framing it as an organic entity or end. But it is very difficult not to identify the motivations and the behaviors that enforce or engender capital accumulation. What are the emotional and material drivers for that? And it's becoming increasingly bizarre. And I think that can be the foundations for a future episode where how capitalism operates and how capitalism works now. But let me just say that I think it has been an affirmation for me over the last 25 years that it has involved a reconfiguration of the things that buffer it. And maybe to kind of wrap up on that, that's what I'll kind of leave for future episodes, where I think through a couple of mates that have that particular interest as well, we can see how that looks and draw upon the theorists that add value to that discussion and understanding. And also look at examples of what's going on that might affirm what I guess at least myself and other people that are keen to make that exploration are identifying. I mean, the podcast episode that I did, the last one, that was cool in that we were able to talk about the issues of the day. And I think by doing that kind of thing, be able to kind of connect with how the concepts and the theories match up against what is actually happening day to day materially. That is useful, I hope, and I feel. And I guess for me, it's about just trying to find the time and the energy to be able to maintain the podcast episodes. But look, what is this? I think this is like episode 46, 47 or 48 or something around there. I've continued it over these past several years. It hasn't been as consistent as what I would have liked it to be, but I'm a full-time worker and still kind of keen on doing those side hustles like Uber or whatever, where you can kind of get the platform work. So time is sparing. And I think if it has been one lesson I've learned over this year, I have to get the health balance right, or otherwise it's just going to tip over. And then all of a sudden your savings that were supposed to be for a house are basically your lifeline. So yeah, I kind of don't want to do that again. I kind of, you know, you try everything once in life. So those are the things I like to strike off the bucket list indefinitely and not return to them and not make them a hobby. But with the podcast episodes moving forward, they won't be regular. They'll be here and there, but it's about working out who's keen and who's happy to basically provide some extra voices in each episode. I can't do lone wolf episodes every episode, or otherwise I'm just basically going to be like contemplating my navel and turning things over and over and over in a very autistic way, which I feel I'm at risk of kind of doing, because I'm suddenly finding myself at a loss to try to wrap things up without going on other tangents. But I might try to draw things to a close, in that I think this has been, for this year, it's been a very Like, when doing this introspection in this episode, it's been a very personal experience, a personal journey where I've had to definitely look inward and survive. And I feel like I'm at least starting to come out the other end, and thoughts are now becoming more about what the response is going to be and not letting it become an embittered, self-destructive event. I hope that there is the learnings out of this that that I can use to move forward positively and healthily. So there it is, folks. That's been my year. I now look outward to see what prospects might happen outwardly. And I leave it to everyone else to have a very safe, I guess, reflective end of year, at least to have some time to take a breath, to chill out for a bit, and just have a bit of a think what safety looks like and what is meaningful for oneself and others. So thanks, everyone. Catch you later. And respective Happy New Year.
Clever girl.